Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The key to saving the future can be found only in the past.
Spock, you're talking about the end of every life on Earth.
We're going to attempt time travel.
Sulu, take us home.
They travel where 23rd century man had never gone before. Crazy, outrageous time.
Judging by the pollution content of the atmosphere, I believe we have arrived at the latter half of the 20th century.
Stardate 1986.
San Francisco.
Our only world is waiting for us to save it.
They have 24 hours.
Everybody remember where we parked. Break up.
To complete their mission.
You look like a cadet review.
He will beam you tonight to collect the photons and beam out.
I want you all to be very careful.
Without being discovered.
We have an intruder.
All right, who are you?
You're not exactly catching us at our best.
That much is certain.
This is an extremely primitive and paranoid culture.
Does it mean exact change?
Many of their customs will doubtless take us by surprise.
We're ready for beam out. My transporter power is down to minimal. I've got to bring you one at a time.
You're from outer space.
I'm from Iowa. I only work in outer space. It's too much trouble. Get out of here.
Take off. Can you hear me? I'm lost. Who are you?
I'm coming with you.
You can't. Our next stop is the 23rd century.
Welcome to a Star Trek side special again. They say the sea is cold, but the sea contains the hottest blood of all. Well, whales unite, whales will fight, whales we go on eating plankton. Whales are nice, whales full of spice, and they don't like being wanked on. That's right, we're talking about Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And joining me to double dumbass on you is Paul Litchfield.
Hello again, Jonathan. Hello. This is number four, isn't
number
it?
Number four.
Yeah.
Or as it was called when I was little. I remember it in the video shop, the video cover saying The Voyage Home in massive letters and in tiny letters saying Star Trek IV.
So you might not have known what it was.
Might not have known.
Mind you, I mean, with all the... I mean, it's all their fizzogs on the front cover,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Would you be agreeing with me at this early stage that it's the first slight dip in the film franchise?
I would.
I would.
I still get the lovely thrill because I love this cast.
It's the first dip, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I still love it. I would say that the sort of Genesis trilogy, as you want to call it, is still my favourite.
I think so.
But then I would argue that towards the end of three, it's sort of losing it a little bit.
Right, okay.
But yeah, this one, I do enjoy them going into present day. That is fun. And it feels like a proper Trek episode.
But the bits where it's in space are my favourite bits, weirdly. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
Because I still want it to be, you know, in the universe and all that weird stuff. I think you're going to agree with this as well. Rubbish soundtrack.
Absolutely appalling. Especially
awful.
After you've got
Horner's gone.
Goldsmith doing the first one. You've got Horner bringing absolute fucking gold.
Yeah,
Leonard
Grossman. And this is just balls, isn't
it? Balls. And he did the, I don't know if you remember the Lord of the Rings cartoon.
Oh, is that his other?
He did that. And if you listen to the soundtrack side by side, they sound the same. Which is a
but shame. Weirdly enough, it's one of the most popular Star Trek movies box office wise. Yeah, which is crazy.
It did really well.
Yeah, it cost $26 million to make thereabouts, and it grossed $133 million.
You can't argue with that.
So it did really, really, really well. And it's the first ever Star Trek film to be showed in Russia.
That's interesting.
So one, two, and three, they never obviously got to see. So that was their first intro. And they're like, what the hell is going
what
on,
is Ski? Happening,
they just Ski? Had no idea.
Chekhov is
but
not
they were
hero.
Very impressed that... Chekhov is like jester man, fall over. Break Noginsky.
He wears funny hair. But they were very...
You wear funny hair. It's an odd one. They were really surprised that Russia finally played it because it's so anti-whale hunting, and Russia at the time were like the biggest whale hunters apart from Japan.
Yeah.
There you go. Shatner wasn't going to do it.
Yes.
He was literally like, you ain't going to get me unless I make $2 million.
Yeah, and also, like, I direct the next one.
And I direct the next one, that was the thing, because he's like, this is the second time Nimoy's got his greasy little logical fingers on this.
Yeah.
Come on.
I think I read...
So he actually made 2.5 mil, and so did Nimoy. I think all the others got, like, carry-on money.
Yeah. I think Sulu got, like, 50 quid.
50 quid, yeah.
Because apparently Leonard Nimoy was reading a book about endangerment of whales, not the country.
Is that all it was?
So he was like, we can incorporate that into the next Star Trek film.
It's so weird having like a fucking hippy dippy man Star Trek film in the 80s. In the 80s, everyone was just like drinking hairspray and, you know, like setting fire to forests for fun.
You're saying that though,
because it was the 80s, man.
If they made this film now, though, it would just be we have to go back in time and get more explosions to explode in space. Because that's Star Trek now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But there you go. It is what it is. It's still got so many lovely, beautiful bomb knots of joy in it. Mostly about swearing, really.
Mostly about swearing. And also it's dedicated...
But not really swearing.
Dedicated to the crew of the Challenger.
Dedicated to crew of the Challenger. Wow. Yeah.
Because that just happened at this point.
That had literally just happened. I think it was in their, like, you know, waiver. But
yeah.
We won't release the film unless there's a huge natural space disaster. Really? Okay.
The world needs another Star Trek, so go on, get in the ship, lads.
Yeah, come on. It's about whales this time. Stop blubbing and blast off.
You know what? We could have used some mannequins.
Yeah, like crash test.
I feel stupid now.
I think, weirdly, right off the bat, because the music, you go,
Yeah,
I don't like this at all. And the title sequence, the actual title of the film, is beamed onto the screen.
Yes.
And that's sort of lovely, but also silly.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, that's just silly. Because it's the sound effect of the beaming of the teleport thing, and then it just appears Star Trek Voyage Home. You're like,
I've got a question for you, though.
Go on.
Well, you know the big box of Smarties that turns up with the testicle hanging out of it?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that got whales in it? Or is it whales driving?
If it's whales driving it, they're very good drivers, aren't they?
Very good.
Very good drivers. Maybe the ball is like a beach ball, but that's more dolphins, isn't it, to play with? I don't know what it is. I thought it was more like a drain pipe with a bore cock. But we're in the same place. Actually, weirdly, I think it looks really cool because it's so otherworldly and insane.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. It's just mental, whatever it is.
It just imagine someone knocking on your door, you open it, and they're just standing there, and they go... like a cat. Meow.
I always think, would it be weirder if like they have to come back and their thing is bonobo monkeys, so they have to see two bonobo monkeys fucking to say hello. So they all have to go back in time to find fucking monkeys.
Oh, that means like Spock's going to dress up as one when he has to, you know, the equivalent of him going in the tank to read the mind. He has to dress up as one and fuck a monkey. And come back.
Yes, do a mind meld with an erection.
Gracie is pregnant. How do you know? Because I just fucked her.
If it's a bonobo monkey, Spock has to hold its cock and mind meld with it. Anyway, it's not bonobo monkeys.
No,
it's whales.
God. Whales.
Save the bloody whales. Yeah.
But we anyway, don't know
and
this
notice
yet.
Poro, no, we don't know any of this yet. Mm. And Poro Savick gets like second to last billing because she's in it for like a millisecond.
I mean, it is pretty much a fuck off, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. Mm. Apparently, they wanted to have a story, like, or the reason they thought why she might stay is when she was going through the Pom Far in number three with Spock, they somehow got jiggy with it and she's preggers with Spock's kid.
Oh.
And they thought that was an original idea for the screenplay. And then they went, that's awful. And then we went, why don't we just say fuck off to her in the film?
We don't need her.
So we just don't need her.
She could have gone with Sulu, I suppose, to get the helicopter, but then we don't need her to be with him.
No, so. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, all that like splitting off into all the it's like three pairs of two, isn't it? It doesn't quite work.
No.
I think Scotty is the one who comes out the best in this film, which is rare for him
Scotty
to have.
Scotty and McCoy as a double act is something we didn't know about until this film.
They're really good fun, aren't they? Mm. I think Scotty has the best little weirdy bits in it.
He's got the best lines in this film. It's his film.
Definitely. Mm. It's definitely his film, which is like the only time we can say that. So that's lovely.
Yeah, but so all this is going on. Meanwhile, the Klingons are having a sort of inquest and they want justice for what happened in part three.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Yeah,
Spock's
dad
comes
charged. He's been charged with 9 violations, breaking Starfleet regulations. Yeah,
Spock's dad comes in and goes, "Shut up,
fuck off." Oh yeah, he comes in to ruin the party as usual. As per
fucking usual.
I see you're all drinking baby sham. Mm. Yeah.
Have you considered drinking water from a dog's bowl?
No,
fuck you! He's such a drag.
He's such a downer.
He always comes in with that bonobo monkey as well.
The only bonobo monkey that won't fuck as a greeting. Because it's a logical bonobo monkey. Shakes hands and goes, how do you do?
Yeah.
It's not a bonobo.
It's got pointy ears.
Should be humping me leg. It's just ridiculous. Yeah, so Kirk's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. The Klingons say there will be no peace as long as Kirk lives.
Yeah, because they blame him for everything. And I like the way that the Klingon sort of like, whatever he is, prosecutor, his evidence is just literal bullshit.
Yeah.
He stole the Genesis device. No, he didn't.
No.
He used it to blow up Klingons. No, he didn't. He killed some of our Klingons. Well, yeah, he did because they were going to kill him.
Yeah.
It's balls.
That's what the other fellow says. You murdered Kirk's son.
Yeah. Anyway, apparently it's Stardate 8390. Mm-hmm. And Kirk and the crew have been 3 months on Vulcan.
That's right.
In sort of exile.
And they've renamed their ship the HMS Bounty.
The HMS Bounty.
Because it's good at wiping their bum with it.
I thought it was full of coconuts.
It's full of coconuts. That's better.
Yeah. Spock's doing his 11 plus.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's right. It sounds like it's being done by the man who used to do the Micro Machines adverts. It's like... Yeah.
Micro Machines can be collected to 5. Micro Machines can be collected to 5. Yeah, correct. Don't press the keyboard with that.
If I was Spock, I'd be sitting there going, I haven't said anything, and you keep saying correct.
Yeah, this is the easiest test of all.
This test feels rigged. I thought you'd enjoy this. That Bones pokes his head in the Birds of Prey and goes, stinks in here.
Yeah, Bones complains about how much it whiffs.
Yeah.
And there's apparently, because Scotty says that he's had a bit of a dicky tummy because of all the Klingon ration packs. And Kirk goes, yeah, I noticed. That means it's full of Scotty's farts. I'm hoping he does one in a kilt and you get a little flutter.
That's two films out of the last three. Scotty's got some problem because in two, he definitely had the clap.
He's got major. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he had a spot of shore leave.
That's right. And this one.
So when he's not got the clap, he's got the shits. Not doing his down in the fucking engine room all the time.
Oh, God, you imagine the smell down there.
God, is that place airtight? Good. God.
Scotty, we've had a report of a dead dog. Nope, it's me. so they're living in exile. And they've decided that they're going to go back to Earth and face the music.
Yeah, Kirk says, look, I've got to face the music. And they're all like, as usual, we're a family. We're in for the ride.
Yeah. Spock agrees he has to go back and then tells his mum that humans make illogical decisions.
Yeah, exactly.
Because his mum's human, remember?
Yeah, because he gets stuck on a bit of the test where it says, how do you feel?
That's
right. And he doesn't know how to say...
A weird question.
Horny. Yeah. He doesn't know how to say that. How do you feel? A bit bilious and nauseous, actually. I'm sharing the fucking bunk next to Scotty. Bloody awful.
Yeah, his mum comes in and gives him a boring speech.
Yeah,
his mum and dad are so boring.
They are, yeah, bless them. And his mum seems to change all the time. Oh, is this the first time you see his mum? I think it is, actually.
I think I remember reading somewhere that she played his mum in the TV show or something.
Oh, there you go. Same actress. Okay.
And then we cut to Vijay Amritraj from Octopussy, a professional tennis player.
I know, I wrote that down, going, how exciting, the professional tennis players in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what's happened is the Enya-powered dildo, whatever it is, that goes... It's been anything it passes, like, or everything just sort of closes down. It just short circuits everything.
It's like a big EMP.
And everything's ruined.
It?
Yeah, so the first ship it actually does something to is the Saratoga, which you see very briefly. Mm. It passes past the Saratoga, which is the first ever time you've seen ever in Star Trek with a female captain.
That's right.
You've got the female captain of the Saratoga. And by the way, the Saratoga is the Reliant from Wrath of Khan. It's the exact same ship.
Yeah, it looked exactly the same, yeah.
Just, no, it is. They just repurposed it. Oh, they're just like, we're just using that again. Yeah, we're just using that again.
Stop touching but someone's also, boob.
I'll try not to.
Okay.
Meep. So, yeah, so first ever female captain, and the US Saratoga is the Reliant. A little bit of stats there for the staff.
I kept thinking of the Rick and Morty episode, you know, where the big face appears saying, "Show me what you've got."
Right.
I think that's the one he just turns up to Earth and goes, "Show me your whales." We haven't got any. It's embarrassing. So Kirk and the lads are getting ready to go, and then he turns to Savick and goes, "Yeah, cheers, Savick. Have a nice life. I'm guessing you want to stay here, aren't you?"
Yeah. Don't fall off a cliff on your way out.
Well, she goes, "Oh, before I go, I forgot to tell you, David saved Spock and everybody else's lives when he died."
Yeah, he was very brave, and then he died.
And he goes, "You know what? I haven't thought about that for 3 months. Thanks. Now I'm sad again."
Yeah, cheers for that. Yeah, thanks a lot. Thank you very much.
Spock comes in and goes, "Hello, I'm being all weird. And by the way, I can't find my uniform, so I have to wear this toga.
I have to wear this sort of weird, sort of like hippy-dippy jiu-jitsu toga outfit." Mm. And they go, "Nah, that's all right. Don't worry about that." I mean, to be honest, it's only fucking Kirk that's in Starfleet regulation clothes. None of the others
are.
Well, Scotty is.
Yeah, apart from Scotty, that's right.
Bones isn't. Bones is in leather chaps.
He's in
still.
His disco suit, yeah.
He's in his disco suit, and Sulu and Chekhov are all in leather as well.
Yeah, it was the early 80s, they were like, "The future is leather."
It's leather.
No, it's not. It's not, you know.
The future stinks.
Yeah. Everyone should sit down on this, and it should go...
Yeah, when they sit on chairs. Should be hello, CJ. Morning, Kirk. Sorry, I'm late, Kirk. There's a 33 seconds a minute delay over Rigel. I didn't get where I am today.
Bones.
So they're going to fly.
Well, Bones has to sit down with him. Bones sits down with him and goes,
"Oh, I love little Bones."
Such a beautiful scene. Yeah.
But, and he does it twice. There's a lovely little Bones and Spock chit chat where Bones is trying desperately to go, "What was it like dying?"
Yes.
And then Spock goes, "Well, you have to die to know." And Bones is like, "Oh, you fucking stop throwing shade.
Yeah.
Tell me something." And Spock's like, "Nah."
And he's also very literal at this point, which is quite annoying, when he says, "You know, it was nice having your soul. It was nice to walk a mile in your shoes." And he's like, "My shoes?" And he's like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, you know what I mean? Stop being a dick."
Well, yeah, I wonder if it's because they're sort of implying that Spock's relearning everything again.
Yeah, they are, but it's boring.
I think. But it is a bit dull, yeah. But anyway, there you go. It's fine.
So we then cut to Starfleet, and Michael Berryman, the weird-looking man from Hills Have Eyes, is in it as an alien Starfleet officer.
Yeah, no makeup required.
No makeup required, no.
Yeah, and he's going, "There's something going on, I don't know what it is."
Yeah, and then Spock's dad comes in and goes, "Look, everything's fucked, you better send a distress signal, because we don't want anyone coming to Earth."
Again, here he fucking comes like an ill wind.
The guy from Starfleet comes in and goes, "Hey, everybody, I've got good news. This big machine in space is threatening us, but I've got us some strippers, some coke, and some champers."
And a bottle of Jack.
And a bottle of Jack. So, and then Kirk's dad comes in. "Oh, better hide all that.
Yeah.
I think we better send out a distress signal.
I've got some choir boys, some hummus, and a walking tour. Oh, God.
I've got one of those CDs where monks sing popular songs."
I've got, no, that's what I call Gregorian chant. 800,000,009 or something. And, fucking boner killer. Every time. Yeah, it's the end of fucking days. We're going to have a right-o. Where's Nurse Rand? She's fat. Your neck has come down immediately.
By the way, I just found this packet of white powder. I've just put it down the toilet because it's clearly toilet cleaner. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, they're all in the middle of beaming Johnnies on their dicks. Oh, come on!
This bottle with fizzy champagne thing in it, I threw it out because it looks dangerous.
All these tiny bottles with their poppers on, I popped them. Oh, oh. You shit!
He's walking around with his ass wide open. So yeah, he says he better send out a distress signal,
which is Andy, because Uhura picks it up.
Yeah. So yeah. Then they try to send a signal back and they can't. And then Spock goes, "You know what? If my point ears don't deceive me, that sounds like humpback whales."
That sounds exactly like what I would call a humpback whale.
Yeah.
They're like, right, okay, you fucking seem to know about that, don't you?
And he says, you know what? And I reckon if we don't get some humpback whales to them, then this will never end.
Yeah. And they go, oh, right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. We'll take that as red. Yeah. Because they're like, and Spock, because Kirk's like, we'll rush in and we'll, you know, smash everything to shit. And Spock goes, nah, we'd be absolutely useless.
Mm.
And then suddenly Kirk lands on an idea and you see Bones' little ashen face. Like, no. Because his idea is time warp.
Time warp. A slingshot manoeuvre around the sun.
A slingshot manoeuvre around the sun. Yeah. Which I think in scientific terms is a right load of old cobblers.
I think it's technically there is bullshit.
It's right, no, yeah. What you should do is fly very quickly slingshot around the planet. Bullshit! But, you know, it's a fun idea. It's absolute good. Cobblers. But
if they did the slingshot manoeuvre and then they came round the other side of the sun and you cut inside and everyone was just dead and on fire.
Well, they tried. Ashen.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Klingon bird of prey manages to dock into the space station. They open the door and it's like, oh, it just seems to be full of frazzles.
They're all dead.
They're all just knickknacks.
So he manages to get a little bit of a signal through to Starfleet and he says, look, we're out in space at the moment. We're going to go back in time and we're going to get some whales.
Yeah.
Because that's what we reckon the probe's after. But the message all cuts out at that point and Starfleet's like, you know, God damn you, I hope you succeed.
Yeah,
Godspeed.
And you just want Savick to go, that's impossible. All right.
They lock him in a cupboard. Hey, have you been in there? And they lock him in with a broom handle.
Yeah, exactly. Or, why don't you go outside and fucking wash the windows, you? Get blown off the ramparts.
Hey, Spock's dad. Could you go out and get me a tin of tartan paint?
Yeah, exactly. I will try. Brilliant. Mind you, he's so logical. You're like, I made it. Oh, you shit. Oh. He's already got one with him. Logic dictates that you'd ask for that.
No, that'd be a nice running joke. You'd come back and go, I got it. And they're like, could you go and get a long stand?
Yeah. Can you get me an inflatable dartboard?
Yeah. And a sky hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes back every time with it. You motherfucker.
£57 note.
Yeah. Because on the planet 57, it's de rigueur. You little shit.
What do you think of the time travel sequence with the claymation faces?
Because obviously they slingshot around the sun. And I like the bits where the ship's sort of like popping and busting and cracking. That's kind of cool. And then they go into this weird sort of like dream sequence where you see all their faces made of milk or something.
Yeah. It's like those old claymation sort of California Raisins style animation.
Yeah, it's very odd.
You needed, because of the way the music is and the lighting is and how surreal it is, you needed like a little bit of Spock running out in a bra, just kind of going, ooh.
Like Benny Hill.
Yeah, being chased by Kirk.
Or it could have been like in the first one when they sort of come out of the tunnel and they're all like, that. And maybe they could have slid in and out of that and looked old and young occasionally because they're going through time.
Yeah.
But obviously they couldn't fucking afford that, so they didn't. No,
they went with Lionel
Richie. So they said, why don't we get Lionel Richie in
to make models
of us. Have them all made a carnation milk.
And also a close-up of some water with some splashing in it.
Some splashing.
And a sort of computer-generated whale shape.
Kind of shape. Yeah, look more like a manta ray.
Did.
Yeah. And a sort of wax man falling into like a furnace.
Some dry ice.
It doesn't make any fucking sense.
It looked like the beginning of Quantum Leap for a second. So everyone falls asleep and then they hear whale song and they go, but sir, it's not coming from the sea, it's coming from San Francisco.
It's coming from San Francisco. And Sulu goes, oh my.
And then Scotty goes, got bad news. Bad news, everybody. Harvey Milk's dead. No, yeah. he says that after that jump, we've just run out of power. And in 24 hours, we won't be able to cloak.
No power. Yeah, we got no power at all. But don't worry, throughout the entire film, I'll use the fucking teleporter beaming thing like it's a fucking new Christmas toy.
Yeah.
Constantly being used.
Constantly.
They're always outside the ship and they get beamed in. Just fucking open the hatch.
Yeah. That seems silly.
Does seem silly, doesn't it?
But anyway. Spock goes, hang on, at this point in history, everyone was messing with nuclear weapons and stuff. And naval submarines, naval vessels, sorry, all full had of reactors.
Fission.
Yeah. So we could put up a sign saying,
a plan is hatched.
Gone fishing.
And they land in Golden Gate Bridge Park or something, don't they? San Francisco Park. Oh, like and
Kirk says,
park.
Kirk says, by the way, I don't think any of these people would have seen extraterrestrial life. So Spock rips a bit off his robe and ties it as a headband over his ears.
Cunning, isn't it?
It's great.
Cunning, that. Yeah. Actually, that's kind of cool.
I like that bit.
Yeah. And I love the landing sequence.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Again, it's the sci-fi element to it. Mm. It's brilliant. You've got two dustmen going, that goddamn dame charged me $60 for a pop-up toaster.
And then he says, what did she say? And the ship lands and we never know.
You never know. But there's that brilliant bit where a dustbin that they've been, or the trash can, you see it invisibly flattened by the cloaked ship and then the thud of the landing gear. And that's an amazing effect.
It really is.
And it's so cool. And you go, oh, that's why I like this film. There's a bit of sci-fi in it. Oh, it's stopped now.
Well, you do get the good joke when they come out and Kirk says, now everyone will remember where we parked.
Yes, that's lovely. And they've been split into three teams, essentially, haven't they?
Well, first we get the everyone remember where we parked, and it goes...
Suddenly...
We're in 1986.
80 San Francisco. Yeah, it's so cool, isn't it?
Get your leather chaps on.
And Kirk immediately almost gets run over.
Yeah, because the guy calls him a dumbass, and then he says, well, he goes, double dumbass on you.
Double dumbass on you. Mm. And then goes, look, me and Spock are going to go and check out the Blue Oyster. And you lot just mingle and look normal. And he sort of looks at me and goes, oh, do the books.
I like the good writing here because they need money.
Yes.
And then we remember that...
Oh, this is lovely.
McCoy gave him those antique glasses in part two.
Yeah, because he's allergic to rednecks.
Yes.
So he gives him the antique glasses and he sells them for $100 and something, doesn't he? $100.
And the great line is, Spock goes, should you be really getting rid of those? And he goes, well, I'll get them back. That's the great thing of time travel.
That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, there's a weird blasé attitude to time travel in this. Because normally in most time travel, it's like, if you do one thing, if you like even fart on a bee, then JFK will somehow, you know, he'll be shot 100 times, but he'll live or something. Right. In this one, there's loads of like, they just go, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
But yeah.
So yeah, he gets £100 and then like a school trip, he's standing there giving each group a little bit of money each.
Well, so how many of them are there? There's like eight of them or something. Yeah. Six or eight. That's like less than $10, $12 each.
Yeah.
There you go. And it says don't spend it all at once.
It's a great little joke. Yeah.
It is a good joke.
And then,
so you've got Kirk and Spock going off to find the whales. Mm. You've got your McCoy and your Scotty who need to find something that they can transport the whales in.
Yes.
And they need to do that.
Sulu needs to get a helicopter.
Sulu needs a helicopter to transport the whale.
Or to transport the stuff to hold the whales in.
Sorry, to bring the whale. Mm. And Uhura and Chekhov have to find nuclear fusion.
Yes. All they got to do is put
to
a little,
restock the ship.
Yeah, it's like a little box you put on the side of the containment unit and it sucks all the energy into it.
Yeah, it's like a sort of radiation Tampax.
Yes,
it
just
absorbs. Yeah. So that's what they do. And that's pretty much now the rest of the film is little bitty bits and bobs of them all in different moments of peril or non-peril.
But then you get the bit where Kirk and Spock are like, well, where the hell are we going to find humpback whales in San Francisco? And then a bus pulls up saying, come to the San Francisco place where you can come and have a look at these two humpback whales we've got.
George and Gracie.
That's it. And then they get on the bus and then immediately get off and he says, what does it mean, exact change?
Yeah, it's all lovely, all this, but I'd rather they were in space.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, so
it is fun.
And then you get Uhura and Chekhov asking a policeman, in a Russian accent, where can I find nuclear vessel?
Yeah.
And the policeman just ignores them.
It's like one of the village people they're talking to, just staring at them going, I'm sorry, I'm going to meet Sulu here in 10 minutes?
Yeah.
They're just literally... Well, it is quite funny, the idea of a Russian going, I want nuclear material!
Yeah.
It doesn't really go anywhere. Like, they should have been immediately arrested.
Yes.
But there you go.
There you go. But meanwhile, Kirk and Spock do get on the bus, and we see Kirk Thatcher as a punk. Now, he was in Discovery playing the same part, wasn't he?
Yes, he's actually one of the producers.
That's right.
Of the film. And they asked him, do you mind if we shave the side of your head and you do that? And he's like, yeah, no probs.
And he's listening to a song called Go to Hell.
Or which he wrote.
Is it Go to Hell?
Which he wrote for the... Something like that. Yeah. Which he wrote for the thing. Mm. And everyone's like, oh man, this horrible punk music. And Shatner, being an old man, do you mind turning that down? Which is weirdly extremely prescient, because this is the same thing I go through on most bus journeys in London.
Yeah.
Where I want to turn to someone listening to Dua Lipa on their old mobile phone and go, do you mind turning it down? But I don't now, because I might get knifed.
Yeah.
So I say nothing and I just put up with it, like the rest of the passengers on the bus.
Well, you need a Spock to reach forward and give him a Vulcan death grip.
Yeah, but before that, the guy gives him the finger.
He does.
He goes,
and turns the music up as well.
Turns music up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spock clips him, he lands on the stereo, and turns it off, and everyone applauds.
Yes, apparently that was done on a couple of takes, because he just collapsed and the music was still playing, and it was the guy, the punk's idea to his own face somehow turns off the volume of the thing, which is a really nice little idea.
I like that he's basically...
And everyone bursts into applause.
Yeah, I love that he's kind of like...
On the bus, yay!
Famous for playing that little role that everyone... He is a beloved little role, isn't it, in Star Trek.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Mm.
I always used to think it was naturally going to be Bobcat Goldthwait doing it.
Yes.
Because of the close association with the Police Academy films. I just thought, because he starts off as a punk, doesn't he?
He does, but this bit's funny, so it can't have been him.
Yes, yeah, so definitely not him.
So, Kirk and Spock go to the aquarium, and we meet Dr. Gillian Taylor.
Now, do you know who they originally wanted to play the role before they went to Dr. Gillian Taylor? I hope you know this.
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy? Mm. That's insanity.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy, they wanted to play an astrophysicist, but he ended up doing The Golden Child.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think everybody wins
film
there.
That would have been. Yeah, exactly.
Well, there was the thing in the 80s, wasn't there, where it was like Superman 3 did it as well. It's like, we need to put comedy people into sci-fi or serious films, because everyone loves comedy, and even if it worked or not. And
Yeah, like, we need Don Rickles to be in.
Yeah. Don Rickles plays one of the whales in this, though, so... I love her first line. She goes, the first misconception people make about whales is that they're fish. I'm like, who thinks that?
And everyone goes, we all went to fucking high school. All right, love.
But she's a bit sad, because she goes, you know, these are lovely whales we've got here, but they're going to be put back into the wild soon. And then she talks about the the whale slaughtering that's going on.
Well, she stands in front of this TV set and we watch literally a whale having its blubber, like, literally its belly slit and blubber falling out. And you're like, all right.
Yeah.
But they're really hammering in that message, aren't they? Mankind, man cruel.
That's right.
Yeah.
You see, what they should have done is a little cartoon, like in Jurassic Park.
Like in Jurassic Park, yeah. There you go, yeah. The problem is that most of these whales are full of mayonnaise, and we love mayonnaise, which is why we kill them.
It makes me think of that song from Not the 9 O'Clock, Not the 9 O'Clock News.
Hundreds of chainsaws, thousands of bloodthirsty seamen, and only 3.5 whales left to go.
When I was a kid, I used to know that. I can't remember it now. It was lots of everyday items that I didn't know were made from whales. Barry White, he was one of them.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. Wasn't he? Wasn't he called the Whale of Love?
You know, he was the walrus.
Oh, yeah.
He was the walrus of the all-you-can-eat buffet.
That's right.
What he was known as.
That's right. Yeah.
Who was the pipistrelle bat of Glory Holing?
That was do you think? That was Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry.
Yeah. He loved showing everyone his ding-a-ling, didn't he?
He was the Slim Loris of chess. It's kind of working out.
That was Garry Kasparov.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, it makes sense now.
So while she's looking around, there is some great Shatner comedy face acting here. Because while she goes, let's go and look at the whales in their natural place under the water. You know, we can look at through
in
the tank.
In this big tank.
And then Spock starts swimming around in there to look. And Shatner's face is doing a kind of, oh.
There's loads of, Yeah, there's loads of what would happen if Frank Spencer went into any shop.
Or Terry Scott.
Or Terry Scott, my God, get out. There's loads of that acting. He's doing lots of hands in front of his face like, what are you doing, old gold?
And then she's like, right, well, I'll go and see to this. And she runs upstairs to catch Spock coming out of the tank. And then she's like...
In his pants, by the way. In his Starfleet grey pants.
She says, what the hell are you doing with my whales? And he says, well, they like you very much, but they are not the hell your whales. And she says, I suppose they told you that. And he goes, the hell they did.
The hell they did. And you go, yeah, that is lovely. But then you go, you can stop now with all that.
No, there's more. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. There's a lot more. Like, fuck you prick. No, Spock.
No, stop saying
don't,
that.
Don't do that, yeah. It's just sit on that and swivel.
You said
Spock.
That to a small child in a shopping mall. Don't do that
you
anymore.
Said that to all the vicars in San Francisco.
You said it to a disabled boy.
You said it to Sister Wendy, who was doing an art program. You went, Picasso, we should pick my arse over. And you went, Spock, don't. Just think.
I like this painting, you cunt. No, you can't say that.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So again, Gillian mentions the whales being released, so she's annoyed.
She's very annoyed.
Very annoyed. We cut back to Chekhov and Uhura. They found a nuclear vessel, and guess what it's called?
Oh, that's right. It's called the Enterprise. Yeah, it wasn't called the Enterprise. They originally had a ship called the Enterprise, but it left, and they just went, oh, fuck. So that's why it's got little awnings outside on the dock going, the Enterprise. There you go. Yeah.
But Chekhov goes, look, it's going to be a piece of piss. We'll beam in, get the photons, beam out. No one will even know we were there.
Yeah.
Kirk's like, I approve of this plan. Good luck.
Yeah, good on you.
So Kirk and Spock are walking down the road moaning, and then Gillian...
Just having a walk.
Yeah, Gillian pulls up in a truck and goes, look, I'm a bit intrigued by you two. Do you want a lift?
Yeah, she's got this shtick about she's got a sort of hapless sort of love for crazy types.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, come on, I'll give you a chance, you hard luck cases. So this bit's kind of fun in the car.
I love all of this.
Nimoy in the centre is brilliant.
Oh, it's brilliant.
He's absolutely brilliant.
I mean, I've written down a bit coming up, but there's a bit where she's like, look, I have to check. Are you macho guys? Is this a macho thing? They're like, nope. Are you from the government? They go, no, we're not. I assure you, we want to just help. And then she's like, right. And then Spock just blurts out, Gracie is pregnant.
Yes.
She stops the car.
Screechy car stop. It's brilliant, isn't
it?
Oh,
and he also says that Spock has problems because he did too much LDS at Berkeley.
Yeah, LDS at Berkeley. It's just lovely because it's Spock not quite knowing how to fit in and then saying exactly always the wrong thing. Mm. Keeps calling him Admiral in front of her.
Oh.
This is very funny.
And then Kirk goes, you know what? I think it'd all be best if we all discuss this over dinner.
And then she goes, well, why do you guys think about Italian? And they do that lovely classic.
You guys like Italian?
No.
Yes. No. Yes.
No.
Yes. I love Italian. And so do you.
Yes.
Yes. It's so lovely.
It's perfect.
I know. So I think this is the thing why the film is saved because of these little weird comedy bon mots that they have throughout.
But it's almost like
it's funny.
It's like a just climbing scale of comedy because next we get Scotty and McCoy going to the factory.
Oh, now this is in particular my favourite bit.
I
because
love it.
Because the first thing they do is obviously they just turn up. So the guy who runs it's like, I don't know who the fuck you are. Mm. So McCoy has to do this. You don't know Professor fucking Science from Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
He's here. And then suddenly Scotty takes on this ridiculous, like, sort of pompous role. It's so funny.
I keep just looking at the main guy. He's wearing that big red badge that says, I quit smoking.
I quit smoking, yeah. It's so brilliant. And so Scotty does that, like, I can't believe I came all the... What was it? I can't believe I came millions of... And then Bo does go thousands.
Yeah.
This is really lovely. All the way on this tour. And then the guy goes, oh, don't worry, I'll give you the tour. I'll give you the tour myself to sort of placate him.
Hmm.
And then Scotty starts going, can my, was it subordinate come with me? And Bones is like, don't overblow your fucking part. It's very funny.
And then he says,
and the office bit is amazing.
Oh, I love the office bit. He says, well, how much, what would you need to hold this much water? And he goes, oh, that's easy. It'd be a plastic
6 inches.
Thing, 6 inches. Yeah. And he goes, and then Scotty suddenly turns into like a junkie. He's like, what if I told you I could give you a substance that would be only an inch thick. Would that be worth something to you?
Would that be just you, laddie?
You keep saying, would that be worth something to
you? Yeah, that'd be worth something to you. Choose life.
Yeah.
Choose.
And then that woman comes in and he goes, not now, Madeline.
Not now, Madeline.
I thought she came in to burp him.
I always thought she was coming in to offer him a cigarette. Not now, Madeline. God damn you. And then there's a beautiful bit where Scotty goes, well, allow me to show you what I can do. And then goes up to this Commodore 64, which it probably would have been at the time.
It's a very basic Apple.
Beautiful. Mm. And the first thing he does is he goes, oh, computer.
And then they hand him the mouse.
And then Bones goes, no. Gives him the mouse. Mm. And then there's a double joke because he holds the mouse like a microphone. Yeah. Oh, computer. He goes, you have to use a keyboard. And then Scotty does that lovely, how quaint.
And then, like a middle-aged man that he is, he uses like one digit per hand to just go tap, 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 tap. And then the guy goes,
tippity, tippity, tap.
Transparent aluminium. Sorry, aluminum.
Transparent aluminum.
And then Scotty goes, was that worth something to you?
Is that worth something to you? Do you want some skag as well?
Oh, it's such a beautiful scene.
It's very funny, isn't
and
it?
In isolation, I could watch it over and over again.
It's great. Yeah, it's just, I think genuinely this is Doohan's film.
Yeah.
He hasn't got a lot to do. He's probably got about 10 minutes of screen time, but he does loads of funny gags in
it's
it.
All and gold. And he's got a cracking line later on as well.
Oh god, yeah. Mm. Absolutely. I know exactly what you mean. Mm. But now we cut to Kirk having dinner.
Yep.
Having dinner with Gillian. She orders pizza with extra mushrooms and whatever and a michelob.
Yeah.
And Kirk goes, yeah, I'll have the same. I love it when Kirk, obviously, this is mental. But that's the first time Kirk's ever had beer.
I think so.
I can't be. They must have beer in the future.
Romulan ale.
Romulan ale. Why, Bones? This stuff is illegal. But he sort of drinks it like, oh, God, I'm not sure about that, but I could definitely get a taste for it.
Mm.
And then 3 hours later, he's in the fucking San Francisco Bay singing, I'm a Charlie Sailor.
Pants around his ankles. Syringes in his arms.
And I like it because she's all like, who the hell are you people and blah blah blah, and like Kirk goes, yeah, do you know what, it's been 3 minutes, and then goes, I'm a time traveller.
Well, he says, what if I told you I could take your whales somewhere where they'll never be hunted, and she says,
yeah,
what place would that be, and he goes, not a place, A time.
A time.
And she goes, let me guess, you're from outer space. And he goes, no, I'm from Iowa. I only work in outer space.
And she's like, of course you do. She's like, let's let the crazy boy talk. And then he just basically goes, look, I'm from the future. Yeah. I need to save some whales. You've got the whales. It would be ideal. And she's all like, sure. Mm. But not running a mile.
No, because she then levels with him and goes, okay, look, Grace is very pregnant. Mm. And they're leaving at noon tomorrow. And he's like, well, if it's noon, we've got to go right now.
Yeah, and they have to get their pizza to go.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because when she drops him back off at the park,
love this.
He's still got the pizza box with him. He's going to take that with him. And there's and then Spock's there as well. No, it's Spock first of all that they drop.
Well, they
off.
Dropped Spock earlier before the dinner.
But he beams off far too early.
He does because she says
he's not even fully done a U-turn and he's off.
That's right because she said you're just going to leave him to hang around in the bushes and he goes, "It's what he likes." And I thought,
"It's what he likes." Yeah. Anyway, so when she drops off Kirk, it's lovely because she's driving off and there's just that little backlit of the beam, that lovely sound.
Oh.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yep. But meanwhile, Uhura and Chekhov have got their little. Nuclear tampon on the machine.
Yeah.
They get everything, but the Enterprise crew of old are detecting a power drain, and then they reckon there's someone aboard the ship.
Mm.
And Uhura manages to beam off, but sadly, Chekhov is captured.
Well, because the ship's so low on its crystals and all that, and also they keep fucking using it to like beam halfway across the room and they can fucking walk, because they're just beaming everywhere in this. Scotty says I can do one at a time, so Uhura gets out first. And then, kind of like when Chekhov's going, anytime now, Scotty, anytime now. Well, he's not doing it in Scottish, that'd be weird. Hmm. Anytime now, Scotty! And all that, and he gets caught.
Yeah.
And then he gets interrogated.
Because obviously he's Russian, he's aboard a nuclear submarine, it's the height of the Cold War.
Yeah.
Well, towards the end of the Cold War.
He has a conversation with the guy interrogating him, and he leans to his compadre and goes, this guy's a Rusky retard.
A Rusky retard, yeah. And then Chekhov loops up with his stun gun and goes, I'll have to stun you. And the guy's like, okay, stun me. And he presses the button and it makes the worst sound effect I've ever heard. It kind of goes, meh.
It goes, It's a bit like the sound when Roger finds the Citroen car.
Yeah.
It's just a really pathetic,
yep.
Yeah.
And then he goes, oh, it must be the reactors. And then he runs off and we get Chekhov's run. And I've put here, Chekhov's run. We should have seen him running on a mantelpiece in the first act.
It's such a terrible piece of music.
I hate it.
And it happens again later in the fucking hospital. It's just, we're fiddling, jolly bloody James. It's like, oh, stop this. It's horrible.
Just keep thinking, imagine what James Horner would have done this film.
Oh, it would have been so good. Anyway, so he sort of runs as fast as he can.
And then fucking falls off a ledge.
Yeah, you can't catch me, on the ginger schnapps man. And then just falls into a fucking silo or something.
But he's in critical condition, we hear.
Apparently he's in critical condition. Uhura can somehow find that out. She's listening to local hospital gossip.
I guess so, because then we hear...
How's she getting that information?
Well, we get a rule of three, don't we? We get full power's been restored to ship.
Yeah.
The tank's been successfully installed.
Yeah.
Chekhov is in critical condition in a hospital nearby.
So we can't quite leave yet. Yeah.
So they're like, we have to go to the hospital and get him. And then Spock's like, you know what? That is what we have to do. And Kirk's like, is that your logical prognosis? And he goes, no, it's my human one.
Yeah, it's the whole the outweighs the rule of the many thing, which his mum gives him in the beginning of the film, which he's also had in Wrath of Khan. So it's all coming back to that.
So they go to the hospital, and as they're walking past, McCoy sees an old lady, and she's like, oh, I've got no kidney. And he goes,
I need dialysis.
And he goes, take one of these. And she's like, oh, I reckon it was an ecstasy tab.
She's like, he's a good.
Well, no, we find out later that her kidney just completely restored. She's now got a brand new kidney.
But again, McCoy in this, DeForest Kelly in this bit, when he says every single line, anyways, you goddamn barbarians, 20th century medicine. It's really funny.
So yeah, they go in where they're about to do the operational Chekhov, and McCoy checks over. Kirk puts them all in a room and melts the door so they can't get out.
Melts the door handle, which is kind of cool.
And he puts like a sort of VR headset on Chekhov. Because he says because the doctor's suggesting they drill a hole in his head to relieve the pressure. And McCoy's like, no, we've got to fix the artery, you barbarian.
Yeah, you barbarians fucking love all that stuff. It's really good fun. It's perfect Bones dialogue as well. Just finds everyone just like literally like the Middle Ages compared to him. And then they put a little thing on his head and he goes, beep, bleep, beep, bleep, beep, bleep, beep, beep. And Chekhov goes, hello.
Yeah. I fell off a boat.
And then he got us. Then he got it. I fell off a boat. And then they've got to run him out of the hospital. In fact, they don't need to do it because again, they don't think because to get into the operating theatre, they put Gillian on the gurney.
Yeah.
Because there's police guarding it because obviously he's like a prisoner of war at that point, isn't he, Chekhov?
Yeah.
And they rush her in and then they rush Chekhov out and the police will go double take and go, hang on, and then they immediately peg it. And then you get another sort of Chekhov's run reprise.
Yeah.
And it's just awful.
But I do like the fact that they get in the lift, the policemen chase the lift down, and as the door opens, they have their guns out and it's completely empty because they've teleported back to.
And you immediately see them beam back into the park. It's lovely, isn't it?
Lovely.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Yeah.
So Gillian, he says to Gillian, well, we got to go. You go away.
You bugger off.
We'll get the whales. Because the whale, we also found out at this point, the whales have been released early.
Well, yeah, no, it's she goes and then finds out.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Yes.
She goes back to the centre and then the guy who she slaps really viciously. Mm. Goes, oh, we sent them out late last night to avoid any blustery hoopla.
Mm.
And goes, they'll be in Alaska by now.
So she races back to the bird of prey.
Yeah, this is cool.
They beam her on board and she's like, whoa.
No, first of all, she sort of like walks into the ship, which is brilliant. Does that funk, which is really cool. And then they beam her on and she's screaming because that's, you know, which she would be.
It's good she didn't turn up like the guy in the beginning of Motion Picture who turns up as a big lump of meat.
No, here you go, because this should have happened later when she helps them and they say goodbye and Kirk beams and she jumps on him and goes, surprise.
Fuck. Yes.
Now, that should have happened. Like Kirk appears on the Klingon ship and there's half of Gillian.
Yeah, just hanging off and going.
Everything is just all her guts are spilling out. What was her arso that didn't make it? Because the back of her head and back of her legs haven't done it.
Oh, no, now Kirk's got a wee through her head.
She has to do, by the way.
But no, for some absolute chance, a good luck chance, they both come through fine.
Yeah.
So they go and get the whales. But the trouble is the whales are already being tracked by awful whalers. Not Dirty Bob Marley's band.
Dirty bloody whalers.
And then we get possibly my favourite shot in Star Trek.
This is, I think, definitely up there, isn't it? Mm. It is probably, this
they're about
bit
to fire the
stunning.
Harpoon at the whales, and as it fires, it bounces off the air. You're like,
bounces off nothing, and then suddenly, Klingon bird of prey decloak over a whaling ship, and it looks beautiful.
It's just hanging in the air, looking at the ship menacingly.
It's because it's a bird of prey as well, so it's got its wings raised like it's about to pluck a mouse, and the ship is just turning with a ding 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 panicky bell and the choppy sea, and they've got the shadow over the ship that looks right, and the ship looks fucking incredible with the big glowing torpedo front that the bird of prey has.
I don't know if we talked about it enough in part three, but I just love this ship design. It's one of my favourites.
It's beautiful, isn't it? It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Is the highlight of the entire film, I think.
It is.
Is this decloak bit. Because you go, wow. You get the sheer size of the ship and everything. Mm. And of course, it's just the most exhilarating thing to see, like people seeing alien life and not knowing what to do.
And also the lovely, it's part of that kind of trope of 80s magic that I love, where the harpoon just literally bounces out of thin air. And you're like, what?
What the hell? Oh,
beautiful.
It's
and then
so cool.
They beam the whales on board, and that's when we get Scotty's great line.
We have whales.
Admiral, there'll be whales here.
There'll be whales here. And then, because he's still
got
the
dicky tummy.
Still got dicky tummy.
He says that line, and as it pans out, he is just sat on the toilet.
Yeah, well, he's completely naked. He's got a bagpipe up his ass.
Oh.
He just goes,
he's filling up the bag.
We have whales here. They're like, stay down there.
You should have a little shock to the whales where they just give each other a side eye, like, oh God, what are we doing here? So they then go around the sun again.
Yes, they do the slingshot, but this time at a very reduced warp. They don't go to 9.3, they manage an 8 point something.
Yeah.
And there's a lovely bit where they go, well, we're not sure if we'd be able to do it. You might have to rely on thrusters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's that lovely second conversation that McCoy has with Spock and goes, well, you're just going to have to guess.
Yeah.
And Spock's like, I don't do guessing. And he's like, well, it's tough. That's what you have to do.
Well, no,
and he goes,
Spock
well, I'll try and make it my best guess then.
Yeah, Spock says he'll have to guess. And then Kirk's like, that's great. And then Spock says to McCoy, is he being sarcastic? And he goes, no. Yeah. He's saying that your guess is better than anybody else's.
Your guess is better than anyone else's fact.
There you go.
That's what's so cool. Mm. And that's brilliant. I love all that. And again, it's that sort of like trying to reestablish that beautiful Spock and Kirk thing.
Yeah.
Their lovely little repertoire that they have.
Yeah.
Bones is often the lovely bridge in between them to do that.
He's the perineum. Which
is brilliant. Yeah, he's the perineum of the relationship.
So they then go back to Earth in the 23rd century?
Back to 23rd, but of course, because they didn't quite have enough power.
Yep.
And now the ship is shot to fuck.
And all this alien probe stuff's going on. So the weather's alien probe stuff
going on. Mm. And then you're going, well, how can the ship get to Earth? And you go, actually, it doesn't matter because the ship's already fucked.
Mm.
So it appears around the sun and it just literally crashes
into the sea.
Into San Francisco Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And out come the whales.
And out come, well, no, they don't initially.
Oh, yes, you're right.
They're all jammed in the tank. So Kirk has to do action hero thing, yeah.
And that's at that point, I'm like, oh, Shatner isn't wearing a wig.
Yeah.
Because I'd assumed he was. But because he's underwater and you can see his head.
Yeah,
Yeah. Unless it's a wee. Anyway, so yeah, as you say, he releases the whales, they come out, and the probe's like, okay, nice to meet you.
Yeah, and the whales go, and, you know. And then goes, well, then I'm off then.
Yeah.
And the ball cock goes back into the shaft.
Goes back into the Smarties box.
But I love that bit when the ship leaves. It's really cool. I love that ship. It's just so
colossally insane. It's so original. Insane. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so left field. It's brilliant. And also, I love that you never fucking know what on earth it's about, what it is, what it wanted, what it's saying. It could just be literally like, are they still a bunch of cunts down there? And the whale's going, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's just, room now.
Yeah, I've just been picked up in a big flying fucking taxi.
And now I've got the entire San Francisco Bay with no other whales in it.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. And I'm going to kill the other one. Rule supreme.
And also, Gracie's pregnant, so they're going to pop out more whales. So lovely.
Yeah, Gracie's preggers as well. Oh. And suddenly the probe goes and the sky's clear because the probe was destroying Earth by vaporizing the atmosphere and doing all sorts of horrible stuff. And everyone goes, yay!
And the two bonobos they accidentally brought back are still fucking up on the tree.
Yeah, they're still wanking, but this time in Savick's in Savick's house on Vulcan. He's just looking at them with side eye. They're like,
why did I bring these things back?
It's a tiny bit of jizz hits his Vulcan eyebrow. He just goes, oh dear.
So
it's all good, it's wonderful, and then we cut to the big tribunal that they wanted to happen.
The council basically says,
lovely,
you've saved this planet, so we're going to drop all charges apart from one.
But one, yeah, we are going to demote you from admiral.
I'll read the speech because it's great. He says,
go on, it's so cool.
James C. Kirk, it is the judgment of this council that you be reduced in rank to captain, and that as a consequence of your new rank, you be given the duties for which you have repeatedly demonstrated unswerving ability.
Yeah.
The command of a starship.
He's a captain again, which is what he wanted, and Spock towed him in too. It's your first best destiny.
That's right.
It's lovely, isn't it? Because it's all like, no shit can stick to you, Kirk. You just saved the fucking world.
And he's where he wants to be, because as in part two, he wasn't happy behind a desk.
Exactly. It's a lovely through line to all of it. It's great.
In fact, this and is, then, when I mentioned the Genesis trilogy earlier, this is the third film in the Genesis trilogy, of course.
It is. Yeah. It's certainly not the number one. No. And then he meets Gillian.
Yeah,
and she's like, I'm acclimatizing to this. I'm getting used to this, because she's now with them in the 23rd century. She's like, nobody knows about whales, only I do. Yep. She's now on board a science vessel.
That's right, and he's gutted because he wanted to have sex with her.
Well, that's the first thing I wrote, because she's like, I'll find you, don't worry. And he's like, Christ, I could have had a leg over that. But no, she's off. She's off on a science vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then Spock's father comes to him and says, you know what? All those years I said you were wrong to be in Starfleet. I was wrong.
I was almost right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I brought you a present. It is an eraser. Thanks very much.
And pull my finger. Yeah. Oh, I'm not doing that, Dad. It's
but when he does pull your finger, just nothing happens.
Because he goes, that would be childish.
He's got zero banter about him.
Yeah, he's got no bants.
So then the crew are in a ship and they're like, well, it'll probably be some sort of pile of junk. Bucket of bolts.
And they go. Sula goes, I really hope it might be the Excelsior, which is seeding the next film.
Yeah, well, the one after next.
So, oh yeah, sorry, yeah, yeah. The one after next. Yeah. And no, it's the next film.
No, it's in six. He's in the Excelsior.
Oh, is it six?
Yeah, he's still in the crew in five.
Oh, what's the? Oh, okay. Beg your pardon. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And you think they're going to get that ship, but then they fly over that ship, and then you get hero Enterprise music, and she's looking fucking stunning.
Yeah,
she's been all fixed up since
it's the Enterprise A.
It's the A, yeah, and she looks beautiful.
It means that on that ship, everyone gets anal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love that. It's the way of the world in those days.
It is the rule, I'm afraid. That's naval rules, space navy rules.
Yeah,
yeah. To go on the bridge, you have to be bummed.
And I think there's a rule. There's a rule in Star Trek films, I think. And I think they all stick the landing, is that the last line in every Star Trek film, certainly of the Kirk era, is a fucking belter.
Oh.
And this is no different. They get on the Enterprise, it's all shiny and new.
It's beautiful.
And Kirk just says, let's see what she's got.
Yeah, and then you just see her going to warp.
Oh.
Shoom out, and you go, ah. Oh. But the thing is, when the whale probe leaves, you've got that lovely shot of the starbase coming back to life.
Mm.
And the things that I appreciate in the film are all the space stuff, because they're so minimised in this film. Yeah. You don't see much of it. So when you see it, even the Vulcan bird of prey the Klingon bird of prey when it leaves Vulcan looks beautiful as it skims past the cliff.
You're right. Yeah.
It's so lovely into the sun. And that bit you go, oh, out of space.
Yeah.
And sort of as much as I enjoy this film, there's no out of space, and you go, oh, because when you see the starbase light up and you see the Enterprise bolt off at the end, because again, it's the fucking other character in Star Trek, it always has been.
Absolutely.
You see the Enterprise and off we go, and it zooms off in warp, you just go, I want to see more of that, please.
Yeah, well, you won't have long to it, only 3 years.
Yes, just a 3-year wait, and then Shatner gets his turn.
And we will talk about that, but I'm probably in a minority with that one.
Go on.
I really like it.
I also have a lot of fun with it too.
Well, we'll keep our powder dry on that one.
We must, yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question. If this a different dimension where instead of human beings we were all whales, would Star Trek IV be about them having to get two little naked men?
Which is what? Kept in some sort of zoo.
Kept in a zoo. Yeah, and everyone else is underwater.
Yeah. George and Graham.
George and Graham.
Also, George is pregnant. We don't know how.
Nature found a way.
Don't know how. And they dump in the water and they start bumming. Yes! Yay! Yay! Everything's fine.
So where would you... We talked about this before, I think.
Where would I place it?
Where would you place it in the six? The original six?
Gosh. I don't know. It's really... I think, weirdly... that's a really good one. I prefer 5 and 6 to 4.
I think you're right. I agree.
So I think... So 4 is probably at the end
for me.
Which is weird. Then followed by 5... 5 is second to last.
You mean preceded by 5?
Yeah, sorry. So, my order is 2, 1, 3, 4. No, it's not. Sorry. Anyway, we'll work out when we do the whole lot.
When we do the whole lot.
I think it's my least favourite, and I still like it.
Yeah, I think this and 3 are my least favourites.
Right. I don't mind 3. I love lots of 3.
I mean, I like them all. That's the thing. I don't hate any of them. I love them all. But I think I prefer... Obviously, 6 and 2 are up there for me. But then again, I think 1's... 6, 2 and 1 are strongest, I think.
I really like Original Trek when it used to go to Earth and all that stuff. I sort of went, you're in a film. I don't necessarily want it in my movie.
Yeah.
I can see why they did it.
I can see why they did it. It's cheaper.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I can see what the message they were trying to make, and Nimoy was extremely excited about it. It has so many. It's out of all this and the next film where we have Row, Row, Row Your Boat.
Yep.
It just has that real sense of like matey family about it.
Absolutely. And the plot of 5 is a proper pulled right out of the original series, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It could just been a mad episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't quite live up to his expectations, but the notions and the ideas in 5 are brilliant.
I mean, we'll get
And that. Only Shatner can do it.
Yeah, it had so many pitfalls, and I think it managed to stick the landing. But
I think so.
But
yeah,
I think the idea to get Nicholas Meyer back for 6 was a great idea. 'Cause
yeah, and 6 is amazing. Mwah. Mm. Yeah.
It's anyway, got the best ending. There we go. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, or if you're like me in video shops as a kid, The Voyage Home, : Star Trek IV. Depending on how you want to look at it. Well, Paul, thank you. It's always a joy.
Oh, we love it's always a joy tracks.
To talk about you anyway, but I love to talk about you, talk with you. But
you can talk about me to me if you want.
I don't want to talk about you to you.
No, don't talk about me to me.
But it's all always right. Lovely to talk to you about Star Trek.
It is, isn't it? It's an absolute love. I adore the bones off it, that's the thing. It's one of those things where you can forgive everything with it and still love it, whereas I can't weirdly do that with Star Wars.
No, absolutely.
Same. Star Wars, I can go, no, I abjectly hate so much of it. Yeah. And there's so much I adore of it, but the stuff I will happily never, ever see again. Same. Whereas I think this film, Voyage Home, I've seen it at least 20 times. Yeah. Easy. Yeah. Easy. And it's not my favourite, but I'll still watch it every time because I adore the ethos of it. It's beautiful. And the films are just stunning.
And what I really liked about it is that I recently bought the 4K box set and it came with a separate box set of Blu-rays. And I thought, I'll give that a pull.
Oh, and he gave that to me, didn't he? And nice. I've been loving it. There's three discs for motion picture.
Yeah.
What? So there's the original, there's director's cut, and then there's a whole thing of extras.
Mm.
Ooh.
Blimey. There you go. Well, thank you so much, Paul.
You're welcome. I'll see you for number five at some point.
See you for number five at some point.
Yeah. Until then.
Until then.
Oh, dear.
Ugh, goodbye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.